BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Welcome to the windowless basement. Very fancy.
Why does it have no windows?
It's more secure. If someone was going to try and get in here, it would be a lot harder than if we were on a ground floor.
My journey through Colorado's political conspiracy land has already taken me to a waterfall in the Rocky Mountains. Now I've ended up underground in this basement of a very square building.
We're going to another secure room that we are calling ballot processing.
I'm just outside a city called Golden, and I'm with Amanda Gonzalez, who's in charge of running local and national elections in this county.
You would have dozens, if not hundreds, of election judges walking around.
Amanda's wearing a sharp suit and little stiletto heels that click as we walk along a corridor which is very concrete. Security here is really tight. That's because this is where the votes are counted.
I'm 90% sure that my key works for this one, but let's check.
Yes.
Amanda takes us into a room that's set up with fold-up tables, like for a kid's birthday party. It's empty at the moment, and the only sign of who works here is on the walls.
I've spotted a few of these now, these big framed images on the walls, and they've got pictures of people, and they've got lots of signatures.
Yeah, so they're pictures of our election judges, and they're signatures that's sort of like if you played on a baseball team or something.
The other reason for the security in this building is because the threat facing some of those who work here is very real. Amanda introduces me to a man with big round glasses and long black hair tied in a ponytail.
My name is Kong. I'm the technical support IT guy here in the elections division.
Kwong's role has become more visible since Donald Trump and some of his supporters falsely claimed the 2020 election was stolen because of a rigged democratic process.
I think as an election worker, we are kind of the front lines, right? You know, post the results of 2020, myself and my colleagues have been targeted with harassment, accusations of us doing nefarious things.
Some of the false and unfounded theories flying around back in 2020 were that lots of suitcases filled with fraudulent votes were counted, that many voting machines were hacked, and that votes cast in the name of people who were dead swung the result in Joe Biden's favor.
In fact, a lot of election administrators, because of the threats and the targets, are leaving the industries in droves, right? They don't want to be exposed to this. And so not only are we being impacted by the threats, but this industry as a whole is losing a lot of institutional knowledge.
Kwong tells me a lot of this is happening online, but it's also affecting the real world too.
A lot of us are more hesitant to be open about our background or what we do. I don't tell a lot of the public that I'm in elections unless the conversation drives it that way. I generally tell just, you know, random strangers that I'm just in IT.
An IT manager like Kwong wouldn't usually expect to be facing threats because of his work. But he's not alone. People have been prosecuted for threatening election workers online and even by voicemail.
You frauded America out of a real election. We'll fucking kill you. You will fucking pay for your lying.
Your daughter is beautiful. It would be a shame if something happened to her.
These are examples of the messages voiced by actors. Since the 2020 election, politicians, local officials, employees, and volunteers have been targeted, and candidates in Kentucky and New Mexico, and of course Donald Trump himself, have been shot at.
All of a sudden we heard shots being fired in the air, and I guess probably four or five, and it sounded like bullets, but what do I know about that? But Secret Service knew immediately it was bullets.
Four shots through the front door, two shots through my partner's vehicle. It was shocking and scary.
A man walked into our office. When we greeted him, he pulled out a gun and began shooting.
How did less high-profile people like Kwong and Amanda find themselves targets too? With the next presidential election fast approaching, I've come to realize how real-life events don't just play out on social media. It's often the other way around. In other words, it's social media's world, and the election's just living in it. I want to understand the impact of conspiracy theories like some of those we heard about in episode one. What are the real-world consequences of people believing almost anything can be staged or rigged, whether that's assassination attempts or elections? I'm spending time with some of the election workers in the firing line. I'm Mariana Spring, the BBC's disinformation and social media correspondent. And from BBC Radio 4, this is Why Do You Hate Me? USA. Episode 2, Counting the Threats.
So I actually had called one of my best friends and said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. If I win, and if things get yucky during the presidential election in 24, like, could I stay with you if I needed to?
Shortly after the last presidential election, Amanda Gonzalez was weighing up whether to run for office. To be the person who oversees all elections in Colorado, first you have to be elected yourself. She was head of an organization encouraging people to vote and wanted to take that work to the next level. But when she was making her decision, she had to consider what had happened in 2020.
This is a fraud on the American public. Frankly, we did win this election.
False accusations that the presidential election was rigged in some way had spread at breakneck speed. And election officials in states won by Joe Biden, including Colorado, were receiving floods of online abuse and threats of violence.
It was a really scary time just in the midst of a pandemic. And then layered on top of it was this election that felt unprecedented. And so I was a little bit nervous. Every single person I knew who worked in elections had gotten a death threat. I was living by myself. And, I mean, I have a dog, but he's 20 pounds. I'm not ferocious, right? Like, Charlie's not going to get you.
Amanda moved to Denver 13 years before, when she was an intern at a law firm. And she's felt at home here ever since. She says she gets on well with her neighbors. But all of a sudden, she found herself worried about whether her identity could make her a target online, in particular because she's part of the LGBT community.
I identify as bi. Sometimes your identities impact how people see you or interact with you on the internet. And I was nervous about, is this going to be safe? Is it going to be okay?
That was why Amanda decided to phone a friend to ask if she could stay with her if things turn ugly at the 2024 election.
And they were like, yes, of course. Are you going to need to? And I was like, I hope not. Having a backup plan is never a bad idea.
I'm so grateful for my friends and family that supported this campaign, and I'm eager to work with all of you to continue to make...
Amanda did eventually decide to go for it.
Thank you all for being here today.
She now has the slightly obscure title of Jefferson County Clerk and Recorder. She was the candidate for the local Democratic Party, although her role is politically neutral. In the run-up to the 2024 presidential election, her job has only got harder, and she's been reminded of the serious threats faced by public officials and politicians. When Donald Trump was shot at in July, that triggered an online frenzy of disinformation and hate, which became even more entrenched after what the FBI says was a second assassination attempt on the former president in September.
I think my first reaction was, oh, the dial just got turned up. This just got noisier. And I don't think that the volume is going to get turned down before November.
But rather than locking down the election center, Amanda has instead decided to open up and has started offering tours of this concrete basement to the public. She wants to show that her team won't be intimidated and that they have nothing to hide.
I think one of the best ways to combat disinformation is to show people the process, right? Come on down, see what happens, right? Because maybe it feels like it's happening behind closed doors, and so you think some funny business is happening. But we're inviting you behind the closed doors. You have to sign in.
That's quite brave of you, because I think if someone sent me an angry message saying, you know, that they didn't like something, didn't believe it was real, I don't know how I'd feel about inviting them.
I mean, to be clear, if you are making threats, we're probably not inviting you to come hang out with us. If you have doubts, if you are repeating conspiracy theories that you've heard online, that's okay. You're allowed to be confused, or you're allowed to have questions.
How we doing? Are we...
I think we're ready.
Sweet.
For anyone taking one of these tours, the obvious highlight goes by the name of Hal. Amanda's colleague, Kwong, spends a lot of his time hanging out with him.
So, I'm the biggest nerd that you'll probably ever meet.
Hal is that humming noise you can hear. He's Jefferson County's state-of-the-art ballot sorting machine. Hal is named after the malfunctioning computer in the sci-fi film 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Our vendor has a particular interest in us naming our machines after killer villainous robots.
Hal is designed to sort out ballots when they first arrive at the election center, so the team can identify ones from different locations, those missing signatures, and so on. Election-related machines have in general found themselves at the center of many of the conspiracy theories relating to the 2020 election. They've tended to focus less on the sorting machines and more on different machines that count the votes for particular candidates. Some of those are made by a company called Dominion that's based in Colorado. False accusations that the machines were tampered with to change votes from Trump to Biden were spread by Donald Trump and his allies and supporters.
A lot of conspiracy theorists out there, in my opinion, watch too many action movies. None of those machines are connected to the outside internet. So these misinformation about, oh, these bad actors are out there hacking systems, manipulating votes, is just not true, because our systems don't exist outside this building.
Amanda and Kwong are keen to show everyone how Hal and the other voting machines in the building actually work. If people can see that Hal, for example, simply helps sort ballots into different piles before they are then counted, they hope it will demystify the process.
All right, so I'm going to send just pieces through Hal, and these are just test pieces. It's going to go lickety-split, it's going to get loud really quick, and then you'll just see it run.
Okay, so we've got this very large humming. Oh, here we go. Some ballot papers, or not real ballot papers, but papers have gone into the machine. And it's humming and whirring, and oh my gosh, they're going through this little sort of roller coaster of ballot papers. And then they're ending up in these kind of different slots, like in trays, in an office. And that noise you can hear is the flick of the papers. That's so clever.
Kong, how many sample ballot envelopes just went through?
Probably about 1,500 in about a minute, 30 seconds.
That's so many. How much does a machine like this cost?
So this is like the Cadillac, right? The best of the best. And so, give or take, it's about $500,000, and that's including software upgrades, customization, and yeah.
I can see why it has a name.
Amanda and Jefferson County seem to have spent a lot of time and money to try and make the election process as secure as possible. But despite all of that, it hasn't stopped people questioning and threatening them. Amanda's office is just down the road from the election center. It's in the Jefferson County HQ, a domed building that her team lovingly compare to the robot R2-D2 from Star Wars. Your eyes are drawn to the manicured hedges, but in front of them are giant concrete barriers to stop anyone from being able to drive right up to the building. Security didn't used to be something the team factored into their daily lives in the same way. Amanda says the conspiracy theories about the election used to be more niche and less ferocious.
I'm definitely aware of your, like, idiot uncle who would be at Thanksgiving, who would say this thing that he saw on the internet. But this more widespread felt like it just fundamentally changed in 2020. We had people denying the functionality of our elections in just a radically different way.
More than a third of top election workers in Colorado have left office since 2020. The uptick in political violence has coincided with people leaving their roles. And it's not just those in charge who are affected by this. One of Amanda's big challenges has been keeping morale up among the rest of her staff.
Our staff is really exhausted. It's hard to get daily emails that all begin with, you know, you've messed up in this giant way. And they say that in really unkind ways. which is not true. But if you're only seeing the nasty emails, then I think it's really hard.
I find it really sad actually hearing that. Even before you've got to the point where you're doing it, you're having to already think about all of the implications in the real world as well.
2020 was such a game changer. If you were a woman who was looking at running for office in an election official role, I don't think you called your friends and said, hey, could I stay with you if my house ever feels unsafe? Which is bad for democracy. You want people, especially in election roles, that are capable and committed and gonna do the right thing. And so it is a little scary when there are people that maybe won't want to do the work because they aren't sure what a presidential election looks like.
Amanda was elected after things got out of hand in 2020, promising to try and restore faith in the voting system in her county in Colorado. It's different for many of her employees, like Kwong, and also the volunteers who work on polling day, because they've been doing this for years. They certainly didn't sign up to this level of scrutiny, and definitely not the abuse.
Running the day-to-day, like, that's not all me. I can't handle 450,000 ballots on my own. These are normal Coloradans. The people you go to church with, or the moms at your kid's school, or the, you know, guy who normally works at the library takes a couple days off and comes and helps.
Amanda feels very responsible for the poll workers she's recruited. Along with other members of her team, she's implemented lots of security measures to protect them. And she's also found some novel ways of trying to keep spirits up.
We've done a couple staff appreciation events. One of my favorite ones is, you've seen like goat yoga. So we had a staff appreciation event where we brought in baby goats.
The trouble is, the conspiracy theories haven't gone away. If anything, from the investigating I've done on social media, it feels like they're getting more entrenched and more pervasive. And there's only so much officials in one county can do to protect against a nationwide problem.
I think if you had asked me, you know, end of November of 2020, are we still going to be talking about people who think elections are rigged? I would have said no. I would have said, you know, the news cycle moves faster than that. There's going to be other things that happen in the world, but that is not the case.
As I found out in episode one, once you believe one thing has been staged, you may begin to think people are capable of staging or rigging almost anything. And that's a problem for people doing jobs like Amanda's.
Accurate information about elections, unfortunately, is like not as entertaining as false information. Discourse is totally fine, but when you are spreading lies and hate with the intent of riling people up and either making them not participate in our democracy or, worse, inciting violence, I just find it really horrifying.
Online hate hasn't only been directed at Democrats like Amanda. She says that after Donald Trump claimed the election had been stolen, the abuse was actually worse for people in her position who had run as Republicans. That abuse is spilling over and affecting Amanda's daily life.
I'm definitely much more thoughtful about how I post on the internet, right? Whether or not I'm posting in live time exactly where I am. And my partner would be horrified that I'm telling you that, like, I didn't always lock my door. Like, I live in a really safe neighborhood. And that just doesn't happen anymore. And if I'm in a new place, you know, I am conscious that, oh, some people do have negative opinions about our elections, and maybe I don't need to tell this stranger exactly what I do.
Another one of the changes Amanda has made has been splitting up her online personas. She's part of the generation who started using Facebook at university. Social media has been a huge part of her adult friendships.
When I decided to run for office, I created separate accounts for all the political stuff.
Hi, my name is Amanda Gonzalez. I ran for office because I wanted to protect the right to vote. And today, I'm the first Latina, the first person of color, elected to oversee voting in my county.
I do get nervous about, oh, what are the trolls going to say? Am I going to open up this thing and suddenly there's 40 comments that are all kind of horrendous? I do think about those things before I post.
Understandably, Amanda doesn't really want to repeat the kinds of messages she's been receiving. A lot of the hate I've noticed she's had on social media has included gendered slurs and threatening comments. X, in particular, has become a place where lots of women I hear from, including elected officials, say they are experiencing more intense online abuse than they did before the site was bought by Elon Musk. He has tweeted a lot about how freedom of expression is a core principle of what was once called Twitter. The site no longer employs some of the people who used to be tasked with monitoring hate. All of this has consequences for people like Amanda. X didn't respond to my questions about this.
When I think about my counterparts in other places, that people have changed what grocery store they go to, or they've changed the route that they drive home because of threats on the internet. That stuff is really real, and it just makes me so sad that there is this relatively common experience of gendered insults or threats. It's just like kind of comes with it, and it shouldn't.
When do you think that stops? Does it ever stop now?
I don't know. On one hand, it makes me really deeply sad because we shouldn't have to be changing our lives in that way. I will say the flip side to that is there is a little bit of pride in that small group that don't believe in our democracy, or worse, like, want to take it down, like, they're not going to win. All of us are standing up to those people.
It seems to me that Amanda's approach to dealing with the online abuse is trying to stay really positive. I get that, because it's an approach I favour too when I receive online abuse for my reporting. Sometimes it does feel like it's the only thing you can do.
We're all human. Perhaps that person's keyboard warriorness is coming out of a place of them being scared, right? Like, I would like to believe that at its root, that person is also worried about elections, that maybe we do want the same things.
However, the likelihood of these threats coming to fruition can feel greater here because of the right to bear arms.
We do have this sort of undercurrent of gun violence that feels unique to here. I was in vacation in Paris when they won the World Cup, and so there were like fireworks or something going off. And I like ducked in a way that the people around me did not. And I was like, oh, this is American, I think. That undercurrent also just sort of changes the feeling if you do get a threat online.
To deal with abuse across the United States, the Department of Justice has set up an election threats task force to protect officials. In the first 3 years since it was formed in 2021, the task force has reviewed over 2,000 potential threats. 15 led to convictions. Others were defended on the basis of freedom of expression, the First Amendment of the US Constitution. Amanda, as she sees it, is not only in a struggle to protect herself and her staff, but also to protect democracy. After all, democracy does rely on voters trusting the system, and more broadly, buying into a shared concept of reality.
If all you're seeing online is that, you know, it's all these conspiracy theories, you might be convinced to stay home. I don't want this small vocal group of people to dismantle our democracy. And what dismantles it is when people don't participate.
It's actually only the minority, albeit a very noisy one, that send hate or abuse to officials. More commonly, when people believe these ideas, they end up losing faith in democracy and society. It feels like both Camille and Wild Mother from episode 1, although they do intend to vote, fall into that latter category. Nonetheless, even one threat is enough to leave anyone on the receiving end of it thinking about their safety.
When you mentioned about talking to your friend about staying at her house if you needed to this election, do you think you'll need to?
I don't. I am a little bit of an eternal optimist, and part of that is because I do interact with so many people, and I see that most people are good. Like, yes, I get the nasty emails. But I know that that's not the norm.
I get the sense when Amanda says she doesn't think she'll have to go and live with her friend after the 2024 election, that she sounds more hopeful than she does certain. The threats that she, Kwong, and others face are largely out of their control. All they can try to do is protect themselves and help voters trust in their work to keep elections fair. One tour of the election centre at a time. Back in 2020, it was just old-fashioned disinformation and hate in the form of memes, posts, messages that election officials had to grapple with. Those are very much still tactics deployed now. But there's a new tool at the disposal of trolls, conspiracy theorists, and bad actors. Artificial intelligence.
I know how fast our world is changing. When I think about things like AI, what I actually really, really worry about is where no one trusts anything, right? When people can't distinguish between what is true and what is false, and so they just have faith in nothing. I think that is really, really scary.
Most of the examples of AI I've seen spread around ahead of elections so far have been shared as parody, or almost like illustrations. But there's an incident that happened just outside of Baltimore in 2024, which sent shockwaves around one neighbourhood. Deepfakes can be their most convincing when they spread in a local community.
We heard the audio like, I knew it. I knew it. So less than that, we up at rage. Let's call the school. Like I say, no one cares about the truth when a lie's so entertaining.
That's next time on BBC Radio 4's Why Do You Hate Me, USA.
I was definitely too young when I was leader of the opposition, and not to do many of the other jobs I did in government.
Admissions and insights from the people who shape how we think.
I would say my family, well, gave myself and my two siblings a critical eye.
And because it's not just politicians who mould our lives, we also hear from economists, comedians and best-selling authors.
It's the fastest way to change things. You do need politics, but if you want to change something overnight, culture is the quickest way to do it.
Conversations, not newsy interrogations. That's Political Thinking with me, Nick Robinson, from BBC Radio 4. Listen now on BBC Sounds.